This podcast is presented by napsgear.org. Go to Napsgear to check out all their awesome bodybuilding supplements. Right now, they're offering 30% off the entire website with an extra 20% off the orders paid with Bitcoin. Besides carrying top quality supplements for bodybuilding, they also have an entertainment section. You can go there to look at blogs, news, updates. They have picture contests. There's a new picture contest going on right now with 8 prizes of $800 per prize. They have cycle video logs. There's laboratory testing. This is a rare look to see what the actual dosing is on some of the popular products out there today. So check out napsgear.org. They support Advices Radio, so Advices Radio supports them. Check with your local laws before purchasing. And one more note, if you're interested in advertising with Advices Radio, reach out to me, Scott McNally. You can email me at mcnallydiets@gmail.com. Thanks, and enjoy the show. According to the U.S. Bureau of Justice Statistics, over 2,220,000 adults were incarcerated in U.S. federal and state prisons and county jails in 2013. That's about one in every 110 U.S. residents. I don't know about you, but that number blows me away. I bet that if we were to do a poll about competitive bodybuilders, the number would be even higher. It wasn't talked about during the Mr. Olympia coverage this past September, but I bet that a lot of guys that were on that stage, probably all of them, were doing something that could have landed them in jail just to be there. For those of you who have been following my podcasts, you know that I've had a colorful history with drug abuse. I had never done anything crazy, and I had never landed myself in jail, but realistically, I mean, even simple possession alone would have been grounds. So this podcast is going to be a little bit different than the other documentary stories. So far, all the documentary stories I've done have been something that's been close to my heart. For this one, I'm more of a voyeur looking inside at something that I'm not personally familiar with. But let's be honest, guys. A lot of us have done things that could have landed us in one of these places. I mean, we've all made mistakes. And judging by these statistics, the probability isn't quite low. I've heard a lot about how prison is a big business. It makes some companies a lot of money. It makes sense why there's so many people that are getting put in there. Looking at the statistics, it's amazing to see how the graph has just climbed so dramatically since the 1970s and 80s. But that's a whole other conversation, though. This is a bodybuilding podcast, after all. So bodybuilding is going to be the focus. I mean, everything that I've seen talking to these guys, prison is probably the most difficult place to lift weights and get big. But it can be done. And I feel like if I were there, it might be the one thing that gives me hope to keep me moving each day. The one thing that gives me like a sense of purpose. But I'm just guessing. It's not something I can really speak on. So let's talk today to some guys that can. Today on Advices Radio, Locked Up and Lifting. Gonna break my rusty cage
and run. Milan, Michigan, the one down by Ann Arbor, that's the only federal facility in Michigan, still has a weight room. It's entirely free weights. They have no cables.
Okay.
Mainly for safety purposes. You
know, this is Paul. He spent a few years inside. He's also a personal trainer, and he competed at the Mr. USA two times.
I mean, obviously the equipment is dated. It's old. It's ancient.
Sure.
So, you know, the space is minimal. In Milan, they had an indoor room for the winter time, and then in the summer months, they had a pavilion out on the rec yard. Then they move all the weights out underneath the pavilion for the winter or for the summer months.
Okay.
But mostly free weights, or almost entirely free weights. They actually had, you know, depending, you know, a fairly decent, you know, variety. You had a, you know, you had your incline benches, you had your flat benches, which obviously were the most popular. They did have dumbbells. That was the number one thing that always seemed to go, because, you know, guys would, you know, when they were done with their set, they'd just drop them.
Oh, hold on. I got to jump in here a second. and tell you about the No Frills Act, aka the Zimmer Act. Congressman Dick Zimmer proposed this bill, and it was adopted in 1995. The idea was that prison was too fun or too easy, and they wanted to make sure that the inmates weren't having too good of a time. Part of this act removed weightlifting equipment from federal prisons. It also included instruction in weightlifting or martial arts. So for federal facilities that had weights, they were no longer being maintained, and when they break, they are gone.
Okay.
I mean, literally, we'd just drop them on the floor. They crisscross them, the handles, and they'd snap. Mm. So it really, there was like a mishmash. I mean, some weights they didn't have. You know, it might go from, you know, 25 up to 40. They didn't have 30s or 35s or what have you.
Okay.
There might be 170 and 165, and you had to rotate.
Oh, really?
You know, one set you did a 70 in the left and right arm, and the next set you did it, you switched them around. There was 175, 170, 265. So that really, with respect to a set, I think 65s were the highest.
Okay.
And then you had 170 and 175, I believe.
Okay.
So you kind of got, if you got heavy, just, or, you know, people got really creative when it came to ways to make dumbbells or to add weight to the dumbbells or to hold more weight in their hands.
Yeah.
Or, you know, to try to figure out ways to do tricep pushdowns with a rope over a, you know, put a bar on a squat rack and put a rope over it and, you know, hook it to a handle on one end and a couple plates on the other and try to do tricep pushdowns.
Interesting.
Get really creative.
How would you put more weight on a dumbbell to make that heavier?
Well, a lot of guys, you just have to learn to balance it, but a lot of guys would, if they, you know, they would crisscross, say you got a, you know, a pair of 60s, they, you know, you could find a way to crisscross. You'd have to have your partner hand it to you, but you crisscross fives or tens.
Wow. So you're holding,
just crisscross them.
You're holding the heavy dumbbell plus a lighter dumbbell in the same palm, huh?
Yep. And then what some people were doing is taking the safety bars out of like the squat racks, the thinner safety bars. And, they jerry-rig in the safety department or maintenance or somewhere, they'd hire someone to, you know, make little stoppers or little bolt or, you know, little wet washers or stuff that you could put on the bars.
Okay.
To where you could, you know, you could put weight on each side of the, you know, the safety bars that, you know, that you drop the weights on if you're in a squat rack.
Right.
They literally use those bars and find ways to put, you know, put the plated weights on each end of them.
Interesting.
To try to add more weight. The guards, for the most part, again, the guards themselves that had to work there every day, you know, for the most part, you know, they'd see that stuff, they'd leave it alone. We actually had a couple guards that worked in welding where if something that was minor broken, they'd sneak it back in welding and fix it.
Nice.
But for the most part, you weren't. The Detroit Lions at one point volunteered to donate when they renovated their weight room. They volunteered to donate their weights to Milan, and they weren't allowed to take them.
So as I found out, everybody's story was a little bit different as to what their weight room was like. It all depended on the facility that you were at. For Paul, this is the way his gym was at this particular location. My next question was, okay, so you have your weight room. Now you got everybody in this entire place that wants to use it. How do you arrange who goes to the gym when?
Here's the way it's set up. First of all, you have to be in a car. A car is your group.
Okay.
So when you first get to a prison, because there are so many inmates, and the weight rooms are so small, and everything but a camp, which is your lowest level, where basically you walk around whenever you want to. Some of them don't even have fences. If you're at a low facility or above, which I was, even the lows, you have 10-minute moves. So you can only move once an hour for 10 minutes. They have a 10-minute move on the hour. So you have 10 minutes to get to where you're going, and then the moves are shut down, and you are where you are until the next move is called. So it's not like you can just go to the gym anytime that you want.
Okay.
So for starters, you've got to be in a car. It's very difficult to go down there and work out by yourself.
Okay.
Because there's so many inmates in the prison, and there's such little, there might be one incline. So literally, there is literally a schedule, an unwritten schedule, every single day of the week during, you know, the prime, you know, most hours where this car has the incline every single Wednesday at this time.
Gotcha.
And then that was another thing when I got there and I'm like, okay, well, obviously we have weights here. So why can't I teach a weight training class?
Yeah,
could not teach. You still could not actually go out there and teach them how to weight train properly. You could not, you were not allowed to actually have a class.
That's terrible.
Because as you would imagine, the form and technique, you know, for most of the guys in there was just thrown out the window. They really didn't know what they were doing.
Yeah. Now, could you approach someone? So this is different, a different situation here, you know, as far as approaching people on a social level. I feel awkward enough if I'm in the gym and I see somebody who's just heaving some weights around. There's part of me that wants to walk right up to him and say, hey, listen, you know, why don't you try this? You know, you save your shoulders or, you know, whatever. A lot of times I don't say anything nowadays just because I don't want to butt into other people's business. What's that like in prison? If you see a guy who's just bouncing the bar off his chest, you know, what's the deal there? Can you go up
really,
to him?
It really honestly depended on the individual. The funny thing about people in prison, there's a misconception that they're all these hard ass, real super confident, cocky men. And in reality, a lot of the men in prison suffer from insecurity issues.
Sure.
So that's one of the reasons they always want to fight. It's not out of strength. It's out of insecurity or a feeling of insuperiority. So a lot of times it depended on who you approached. But if they found out your past or they knew your history, like they knew with me, I had a degree in fitness. I used to compete. They were more willing to listen. The crazy part about a lot of guys in weight and in prison that worked out is it proved or it showed their desire or eagerness to learn, but they worship magazines.
Yeah.
Flex. I mean, every supplement. I mean, when I get out, I'm going to do this, 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 and this. You know, they just really firmly believe that, you know, these fat burning supplements or, you know, these, you know, steroid replacement supplements or what have you. If it was advertised in a magazine, I mean, they took that as the holy Bible. They believed it.
No kidding.
I mean, they really believed everything that they read in a magazine, you know, had to have been true.
Yeah.
You know, they were that naive, but that eager to understand.
Okay, so far, Paul has talked about a facility that has had weights. In other facilities, he wasn't so lucky. So my next question to him was, well, how do you weight lift if you don't have weights?
You know, you take a mop bucket and fill it with water.
Uh-huh.
And then, you take a mop bucket, you put the garbage bag, you usually double the garbage bags up so they didn't break.
Okay.
And you put them, you actually put the bags, the garbage bags. We got mesh laundry bags.
Okay.
That's what we put our laundry in. So you just, you know, over time you just collect a few of extra ones of those that you aren't using for laundry. You put the garbage bag inside the mesh bag and then fill the garbage bag with so many pails of water. And you measure it out and over time you figure out this many pails of water equals, you know, 75 pounds or what have you.
Yeah.
And then by having the bags, the water bag or the garbage bags inside the mesh bag, that keeps them from breaking.
Correct. I get it now.
And
yeah,
then you would,
okay.
You would, and then, you know, you'd find, usually we wouldn't use a wooden, mop sticks because they'd snap. There were a few, you could find a few metal ones around and you just again, buy them and hide them in your cubicle later at night underneath your mattress or whatever. You found a place in the unit to put them. When you're ready to work out, you went in there and, you know, we literally were working out in Elkton because there was no facility to weight train. And you literally would go into the shower room.
Really?
And there was in the front of the shower room was a handicap shower area. There's not many handicapped people in there. And there was two of them. So one was an open space and we'd go in there and, we would empty a garbage can and lay that down on its side. That was our bench press.
Wow.
We found a way to rig it to set it up at an angle for incline. you had to get the craziest thing in the world, I don't care how strong you are, the first time you sit down, especially on incline, and you grab a hold of that bar that's got two, you know, 75-pound water bags tied to each end, you just shake.
I bet.
I mean, you don't have those secondary or the, you know, muscles. You know, those little, you know, all the other muscles that works, they've never been trained.
Wow.
It's not like you're lifting a, you know, a smooth weight up and down, those bags are just tied to the end of a bar.
Yeah.
And the first couple times in there, you'll shake like crazy. Then you've got to have your partners there to hold it and help you get it up and down until you, you know, you train all those extra little secondary muscles, you know, that keep everything balanced and you can actually lift the weight up and down. You go a couple weeks and you're lifting that weight just like you are a bar and iron on the street. We just would fill the weights with more weight or more water and do squats. You know, the curls, obviously. We have certain ways to rig it to do a bent over rows.
Okay, so we got some interesting perspectives from Paul while locked up in a federal facility. Once I began talking to others, I began to realize that everybody's situation and experience is very different. It all depends on the particular facility that you're at. Up next, we'll talk to Mark. Mark was locked up in state-level facilities where weights were never taken away due to the Zimmer Act.
It gave you that, like, the ability to keep your head a little bit straighter, but also provided a sense of unity because, like, we all lifted together. Like, you know, if you were part of a clique or a gang, like, you guys all worked out and lifted together, and it kind of provided, like, a sense of community almost even.
Okay. Can you paint for me what the weight room looked like?
Well, yeah, it depends where you're at, but like, you know, out in Walla Walla, we had two weight rooms. We had one on the outside on the yard and we had one on the inside, and we had the whites and the Southsiders, the Mexicans out on the outside yard. We took that one.
Okay.
And you basically had gravel. It was completely gravel, surrounded by a barbed wire fence or chain razor wire fence. And you just had a bunch of rusty-ass crap out there. Hmm. You know, your benches, your squat racks, your dumbbells that have, like, you know, you got, like, 140s out there, but they're so rusted, who knows what they really weigh. And, you know, it's just, like, in the summertime, it'd be 110 degrees in that, you know, and you're in a concrete yard. And in the wintertime, it'd be snowing and, you know, 10, 20 degrees, and we were out there all year round just grinding.
So when I picture in my head what a prison weight room would look like, this is exactly what I had imagined.
Yeah, it was pretty intense.
tell me what's...
But, I mean, then you had nicer weight rooms, too. You know, you had other places, like Kualan Bay had, like, a weight room that was, like, you know, it was inside the gym, and, you know, it was, no matter where you're at, the weight room's surrounded by a fence and razor wire, so you can't take the weights out and use them on, like, somebody else. But, you know, they had nicer ones where, like, the welders would like, we had prison welders, they'd weld up a nice bunch of nice, like, T-bar rows and squat racks and cool stuff to use. So I mean, it just varied on where you went.
Nice. Tell me, what's it like squatting in 20 degrees snow?
Oh dude, it's fucking it's awful, man. And the problem is that the ground out there wasn't even, right?
Okay.
So it's not like you're on, like, a flat, like, gym floor. You're on gravel. Where it's like they just kind of, like, threw a bunch of gravel down on the ground, and over the years people kicked it around and you got bumps and divots. So you tried to unrack your weights and you tried to, like, find your most even position and then go to squat, and it was kind of rough.
Wow. What about the respect for the weights? I know that, you know, out here people just throw weights around and they don't have the respect for them. What I understand, though, inside, that if a piece breaks and a welder can't fix it, that's it. That piece is not being replaced.
Yeah. People get pretty, pretty aggressive about, yeah, people treat the weights well. And it's not even the weight so much, because a lot of times you go and, like, the weights are already rusted out and beat down, and at least in, like, Walla Walla and stuff they were. But, like, if you have any kind of cable equipment or anything like that, it's like you treat that shit with respect. Yeah.
Okay.
Because if it breaks, like, it might get fixed, but who knows when, you know?
Okay. So you were telling me that some of the dumbbells are so rusted. It sounds like you're telling me that a 140 might not weigh 140, huh?
Yeah, at least on, like, the outside decks. Yeah, like the ones, yeah, all half of them were like that. And you'd even get in Walla Walla, you know, like the old, like, strongman dumbbells with the balls on the end as the weight?
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
I do.
Yeah, we had those out there, and they're all, like, bent as shit, and they were all, like, bent almost like at an angle, right? And we still had them, though.
Wow.
And people would use them. Yeah.
Any interesting stories that happened in the weight room? Because, you know, I think of it, man, and it's like, you know, you look at, like I said, you're talking to somebody who hasn't been inside, so I can only imagine.
Yeah.
Everything I know is from TV, you know? What's it really like?
Right.
What's it really like being there, like, in the prison weight pit?
Typically, you'll have I mean, just basically your cliques in there, right? So you got your blacks in one section, your whites in one section, the South Siders and the North Siders in the other. And you all sit there, and everyone kind of gets along, but nobody really likes each other. Huh. And there's always kind of an unspoken thing, like, don't use the fucking weights to hit somebody, right? Okay. Like, just don't do it, because then you're going to get it taken for all of us.
Mm, okay.
So you actually don't see a lot of assaults in there, because, like, say you use the weight room, say you use a piece of weight equipment to assault someone and get it taken from us, well, then when you come back eventually, you're never going to be able to walk around again. Like, every single clique's going to get at you, right? So,
okay. Interesting.
It's rare, but not a whole lot of people use that stuff for violence. Mostly it's just, it's not even that really interesting. It's just everyone in there kind of, like, it's interesting in the fact that everyone's in a real lot, small enclosed space, because on the yard, we all keep our distance. We have our own section, but then you throw us all in into like one small contained area. Okay. And everyone's just like really like super ultra respectful and like trying, because it's so like, there's so much friction in there. That when you put us all in that close of a space, and we know we all have to get along in that close of a space, everyone's like really like respectful and like, excuse me,
interesting.
Because in the moment someone's not, that yeah, because no one wants to get that removed, right? And no one wants us. Actually, most people don't really want to go to the hole anyway, unless it's like over something that needs to be done. So you, that's just kind of how it is. Just a lot of tension, but real like respectful.
Huh.
It's like an uneasy like. All right, we're cool, we're cool, we're cool. Let's just all, like, do what we got to do in here.
Yeah.
You know?
Man, this is fascinating to me. It really is. So there's there's, like, a level of respect that's going on in the weight room that you're not going to see through, would you say, anywhere else in the prison?
Yeah, I'd say that. I mean, like, in general, like, the harder place you're in, the more respectful people are, because the more, like, everyone snaps over nothing, right?
Mm.
But no matter where you're at... Yeah, it's always that's definitely more respectful in the weight room, just for all those reasons. Because, yeah, like I said, you're more confined with each other. You're in like a, you know, I don't know how big the space would be, 40 by 50 foot space, 60 by, like somewhere in that range.
Okay.
And there's like dozens and dozens of just like angry, pissed off people.
Wow.
So, and everyone's like, everyone's like, I just don't want to lose this, you know?
Wow. I pictured this to be so much larger, because you said it's like, when you said like the one was outside, it's out on the yard. I was picturing like this giant football field and, you know, all these people all over the place. I didn't realize it's this enclosed.
Oh, it depends where you go, but most of them are pretty small. Like, you don't get a lot of big, there's not a lot of big weight rooms.
Okay.
I've been in like one pretty good size one where it was like, I don't know, maybe the size of a basketball court almost, but most of them are like maybe half a basketball court or so.
Okay. And you've got 50 people plus packed in there?
Well, as many as you can pack in there. Like, they open the gates for yard, and like, you send your little, like the little homies, you know, the younger guys got to go run and get our weight equipment. And then, you know, everyone else just piles in on top of them. And yeah, it's as many people as you can fit, basically.
Wow.
And Walla Walla, like, we'd go every day. I mean, you pretty much just lifted weights every day. Honestly, none of us knew what the hell we were ever doing. Like, now looking back on it, we just knew you lift heavy-ass weight. Everyone was trying to outlift the other guy. We weren't, like, what we did wasn't effective. Like, I mean, it was effective enough. It wasn't optimal, let's say.
Okay.
So, you know, today would be chest day. We'd go out and lift for a couple hours, do chest, you know. We'd just hang out, kick it, lift heavy weights. Next day we'd do back or legs or whatever. And, but as far as, like, organizing splits, like, that's pretty much what we just did, was single body part, lift heavy shit, you know.
Gotcha. So you mentioned that you felt like weightlifting kind of formed a sense of community and bonding. Can you tell me more about that?
So you go into prison, like up here in Washington, like you ain't got to join no gang or nothing if you're white. But, you know, if you get involved in the politics and you're doing a lot of time and you're like in, you know, in the drama, then you do. So I was always involved in stuff. So, yeah, every kind of clique has its own like workout times and workout regimens, and like, you know, we have the weight deck at this time, you have it at this time, or we have this area of the yard to do our burpees or whatever. And so everyone would kind of like group up, and like, it just kind of created a sense of community. Like, when you join up, you click up, you start working out with everybody, and then you get stronger and bigger. And yeah, it just kind of progresses from there. Everyone wants to like have their guys be the biggest and the best. So
yeah, I could see that. Do you feel like weightlifting there had given you like a sense of hope? a sense of something to do something. Because I know for me in my own life, there's been times where I've felt depressed, and I feel like I've been able to turn to weightlifting, and it was able to like kind of lift me out. Would you say that in general people can use weightlifting for that while they're inside?
I could say they can use that. I won't say that any of us used it like that.
Yeah.
I mean, most of us, myself included, we were all pretty hopeless, you know, like even though I wasn't doing like lots of time at once, like max, like, you know, 60 months at a time.
Yeah.
I mean, I still kind of looked at that as like my lifestyle, you know, and it would never change. So none of us really never used it at that, like in that way. But I'll say this, when I got out on the streets and was trying to get actually like my life together, that's when that kind of became like something to hold on to and like a kind of like, you know, a way of hope.
All right. So far, we've talked a lot about weightlifting here, but there's another really important factor that we haven't even begun to discuss.
What about the nutrition?
Yeah. Oh, Jesus.
What does a guy do to get jacked in there? Because I imagine that from everything I've heard, man, protein is not readily available.
No, it's awful. And, you know, when I was a kid, when I was like 18, 19 in Walla Walla, man, they used to, like, before they had all these budget cuts and the economy went to crap, they used to actually feed us. So, like, we had tons of food, but it was all, yeah, carbs and fat, you know what I mean? There was not a lot of protein.
Okay.
So back then you could go in, you could go to the kitchen, you could eat and get full, and you could still get pretty big off just a shitload of carbs and fats. You weren't necessarily, your body composition wasn't optimal. Never in my entire prison career have I ever had great body composition.
Okay.
No matter how much, like, you know, aerobics or whatever I did. But as time wore on and they started cutting back our food, I mean, they cut our food down in every facility to like nothing.
Hmm.
And it was like, actually, like, it's almost sickening, like how little they feed you now. And you either do one of two things. You either order food on store, which if you got money is great. Luckily, I was in a good position a lot of times, and I had people sending me money and taking care of me. So you order like tuna fish, beans and rice, stuff like that. And I'd have my little post-workout rituals where I go back to my cell and I cook up my little store and eat that. And it's like 20, 30 grams of protein, 50 grams of carbs maybe, you know?
Okay.
But that's like half the protein for the day, basically, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But if you did it the right way, what you do is you get a job in the kitchen and then you just pound milk and steal eggs all day and pound those too. And that's how a lot of us did it.
Okay.
Like that, we would just do the Rocky style and drink raw eggs.
So, nice.
Yeah.
Man. So, you said that the meals that they feed you in the lunchroom now, they're terrible. What does a standard meal look like nowadays?
Oh, fuck. Yeah, it like makes me sick even thinking about it. Like, you got like imagine like, I don't know if I can describe in the right, like a visually descriptive enough words, but like a little cafeteria tray, right? I guess from like school, right? Like imagine a cafeteria tray from school.
Yeah, yeah.
So imagine you'll have like, so we'll just say for an example, you'll have like a little 3 ounce, 4 ounce piece of like some kind of like dirt cheap meat that's fried in some kind of way. It's like, they're all like the bottom of the barrel. You know what I mean? Like just
The
worst kind of meat you can imagine. And then with it, you'll have maybe one of those little tray pockets full of like some pasta or, you know, rice or whatever.
Yeah.
Like again, maybe 30, 50 grams of carbs, a piece of fruit. God, that's about it. A lot of times they'll give you these burritos that just have everything in them, and it's like, it's just, God, it's awful. In the mornings you'll have typically like, they'll rotate the meals, but like a little bit of egg, some oatmeal and a piece of fruit, right? But the whole meal there is like, I mean, it's less than I eat in a snack on like a daily basis, you know, it's just rough.
So what I'm hearing is that weight rooms can vary dramatically from prison to prison and dramatically from state to federal facilities. But across the board, everybody's telling me that no matter where you're at, the food is terrible. The next person I'm going to talk to is Alan. He was in for about a decade, and he's only been out for 6 weeks at the time of this recording.
Hello? Hey, how's it going, man?
This is Scott.
Yeah, what's up, Alan? How you doing?
Good, man. How you doing? Sorry about that. Listen, I'm still getting used to technology. I mean, every day is a hurdle. I couldn't figure out how to use the credit card in the gas station a little while. I thought my buddy Donnie is cracking up. Then I hit the panic button on my alarm.
Alan is kind of an interesting case. He managed to stay pretty damn big while he was in jail. Having done more research, I found out that the average daily cost of a prisoner's food is about $2 to $3. I'm not sure the exact protein amounts, but I can tell you that at $2 to $3 a day, it's not going to be much. We all know that protein is the key to building muscle. The more I learn about prison, the more I see it is the exact opposite of ideal for bodybuilding. Between the nonstop stress and the terrible nutrition, I'm surprised that anybody could maintain any amount of muscle while there. Still, I've seen recent pictures, and Alan came out pretty big.
Because the nutrition is horrible. I mean, it's the food that they feed you is this. It's all super high starchy carbs. The little bit of protein they give you is some beans, which I don't eat. I'm allergic to them. They make me sick to my stomach and give me the worst gas ever. But I always had connections, and you have commissary. You're allowed to get $106 worth of commissary every 2 weeks. So my family and my girl and everybody took good care of my business partners and stuff. So it kept me money in my account. So I had, you know, always had $106 every store. So what I would buy was, this is kind of seem pathetic compared to what most bodybuilders and people training eat, but what I ate was a lot of mackerel. Packs of mackerel, packs of tuna, mixed nuts. They had bags of cheap whey protein for $15 a pound.
Wow.
And then the chow hall food, you know, once in a while they had these little burgers, like every 2 weeks you get one burger, which is like the size of like a McDonald's hamburger, and then their chicken thigh, leg of thigh every 2 weeks. What I would do is just end up trading ramen noodles. I always kept, like, you know, 30 ramen noodles in my cell. And on the days that we had something that was decent as far as protein goes,
yeah,
I would trade ramen noodles. And I, you know,
so there's the key. You guys think that we have to hustle hard to get big on the outside? I can only imagine just how much work this is every day, hustling like this while in prison, watching your back and still trying to gain muscle. It's kind of mind-blowing to me, but it really speaks to just tenacity and the will to overcome great obstacles.
I got one joint, they had hard-boiled eggs.
Okay.
Every joint's a little bit different, and what I would do is run around and buy every egg I could find. So,
what does an egg cost when you're trading for ramen noodles?
Some people charge me one a ramen noodle for one. Usually it was like a ramen noodle for two. I try to finagle it, you know.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, like, I'm always on search. You know, I'm Sicilian, so I'm always trying to find a guy, and I always find a guy. Go to the first thing I do when I get to a joint. Hook up with a garden guy who's in horticulture. Hook up with a kitchen guy who works in the kitchen.
Okay.
And then they kind of appropriate certain things out of the kitchen. bring me beef hamburger, not that cheap. Because most of the meat they serve you is that pink slime. But you know they have certain meals where they have the real burger.
Okay.
So you bring me a couple of pounds of burger out of there. I had one guy, I'd send him $50 a month for 16 dozen eggs, raw eggs, which is a great deal for me. I know it's kind of expensive as far as eggs go.
Yeah.
Geez, I'm eating eggs every day, and it's only 6-8 eggs.
How do you keep that food good in your
cell? Hard-boil. You got to hard-boil them in the microwave.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So what I do is hard-boil them in a big bowl in the microwave, and they last a few days.
Okay.
And then during the winter, it's a lot easier, too, like with the chicken and the burger, because I just stick this, wrap stuff up, and I have a little box in the window with like a little door, like a little refrigerator. It's all wrapped in a towel, so it's like a homemade refrigerator. Got a little door, I stick it in there, and it stays cold for days. That's just like a fridge. So, and cheese. They pull like shredded cheese out of there. They pull powdered milk out of there. So I'm always, you know, working an angle, trying to get something, you know. And then plus commissary, I eat good. You know, most guys can't afford $106 every store. You know, most, you know, they pay you a job. You know, your job might be $15 a month, $20 a month.
Wow.
And I went to college in there, so I got a school stipend, which was $12 or something. So, but that's what it is. And food's expensive these days, and they scam us in the commissary anyway. They mark everything up 30%. So a little giant jar of peanut butter is like, you know, $3, $4, $3.50. It's just a scam. Everything is a scam. They really rape you on the prices. But I max out the 106 to get, you know, 10 mackerels, 2-3 tuna, a couple packs of salmon, a couple packs of mixed nuts, a bag of protein powder, a bunch of ramen noodles for bartering, those cosmetics that I need, and that's it. Every store, I get the same thing for years and years and years. That's what I ate. And everybody thought it was, you know, kind of ridiculous because everybody else eats honey buns and potato chips, whatever. But also, I was in better shape than everybody. You know, I was kind of, you know, I was a lone wolf. I didn't have a gang. I didn't hang out in a gang. And I just trained and then went back to my cell and worked on my typewriter, worked on my books. And that's what I did. Stayed to myself and thank the good Lord that I was protected, never had a problem. You know, I've seen a lot of bad stuff in there, but never happened to me anything bad. You know, but, you know, every day in there sucked. I hated most of the people I was around, but generally I just stayed to myself and I trained hard. You know, the weight pit situation is what the weight pit is, the gym. That's what you call a weight pit. I don't know that.
Yeah.
You're training outside. I remember thinking to myself, I can't believe, I mean, it would be, you know, 10 below zero and I'm out there deadlifting in the middle of winter spot, but, you know, and working out and just layered up. You got 5 layers of thermal underwear and a coat and gloves. You're just out there in the weight pit, snow, ice, all in the weight pit, you know, and you're just working out in the snow in the middle of winter, freezing your ass off.
Wow.
You know, getting it in. I never miss. The only time, if it gets below 10 below zero, then I'll skip a workout. But that's the only time. That would be the only time. But I'm not the only one. You know, it thins out. You know, the weight pit definitely thins out in those cold winter days. But, you know, it's always people in there. We always get it in.
Man.
And, you know, one little workout partner, which, you know, just, it is what it is. You got to make do, you know?
Yeah.
And it's all free weight, iron free weight. There's no machines, nothing like that. You know, curling bars, straight bars, bench presses, squat back. I'm still pretty strong. I'm, you know, 43 years old. I can squat 550, deadlift probably 585.
Nice.
You know, you don't have high-end equipment. They don't really give a crap. For the record, you know, it's one big scam, by the way. It's called Visitor Benefit Fund, PBF. Every certain percentage of the money that from commissary gets applied to this fund, like, I don't know, 5 or 10. So that's why they're raping us on the prices, so they can prepare there's a fund to go to benefit the prisoners. And the problem is it never benefits the prisoners. Like, they'll say, this year we saved $28,000 for the weight pit recreation upgrade.
Yeah.
And what they'll do is just buy, like, 5 new bars, because they always get bent, because guys want to shrug with 600 pounds on the end of a bench and then drop the weight, it bends the bar. So put a couple new bars in there and a new curling bar or something, and then basically keep the rest of the money. I don't know if it's the warden or whoever's in charge, but they scam it, and it starts from zero the next year, and this other $22,000 just vanishes. They do it every year. Big scam. So, you know, I don't know where their money's going, but it's definitely a scam.
Now, were you... Have you heard anything about the No Frills Act? I guess that this is an act where they are actually in some states taking weights out of the prison facilities.
I've heard that. I heard about that. I can't believe that would be possible.
It wasn't until later that I learned No Frills actually applies to federal facilities only.
And they were, like, using makeshift weights that they were making themselves with, like, garbage bags filled with water and broomsticks and stuff.
I did that.
Yeah?
I did that in the hole. I was in the hole for 13 months. And I would fill up garbage bags with water and then tie them inside of my shirt and then tie the shirt sleeves together to make a hand hole. And I would do curls and tricep presses, shoulder presses, dumbbell rows, bags of books. Sometimes I'd use bags of books. Lots of times the emergency columns will blow the yard where you can't go outside because there's a gang fight or a gang war or there's other situations. So you're stuck in your cell for a couple of days. Well, then that's your workout up. So what I would do, even when we had weight pits, I would just do a makeshift workout in my cell. Basically tell my bunkie to leave, or, you know, ask him to leave, and I'd spend, dab my earbuds, put my music on. I had an MP3 player, and I just jam out for an hour in my cell, curling and doing tricep presses off the bunk and dips and doing what you got to do, you know, if you want to stay in shape.
This next part reminds me, oh, yeah,
this is prison. This is a very dangerous place. And it sounds like every prison is slightly differently. It sounds like where Alan was not one of the prisons you would want to go to if you were to want to go to prison.
So I've had some guys tell me that, you know, the weight pits were very small areas and that everybody was in a very confined space all together. A lot of different people from like that wouldn't necessarily be around each other are then forced to be together. Did people generally stay pretty cool where you were at in that time?
Well, it depends where you're at. It depends what joint you're at. Like in Kinross, there was gang wars all the time. So you just never know. It was a big weight pit, but there was also 1,700 or 1,800 guys. And they're confined it. Yeah. And so you had 100 guys working out in an area that was the size of like a small gym, like a little mom and pop gym or something. And it's packed in. And you're right. Different sets of gangs. And, you know, they look at, that's how it all starts. You know, guy does. Won't let this guy use a set of dumbbells because, you know, he's belongs to a different set of a gang or something, and it spirals out of control. I mean, I've seen horrible things happen. You know, a lot of blood in those rapists.
Really? Can you share with us one story to paint a picture of what you may have seen?
Yeah, a couple stand out. I mean, Kinross was at one point was the most violent prison in the country when I was there. For 3 years, I was there. And there was 88 stabbings in the first, no, excuse me, 288 stabbings in the first 8 months of that year. I think it was 2013.
Wow.
So just to do the math on that, so 288 stabbings in 8 months. If every month had an average of 30 days, that's 240 days. So assuming that Alan has his facts straight, that's more than a stabbing per day.
And I got to the point, they didn't even close the yard anymore. They just bring out a stretcher and an ambulance, like, and they just pull the guy out of the yard. And I mean, I get the chills even thinking about it right now, thinking about some of the stuff I saw. But like one time, these guys who had worked out with me for a while, they just kind of latched on to me. One of the guys kind of knew who I was from the neighborhood, and he knew who I was, so he started working out with me. But it turned out he belonged to this gang called the Latin Count. And so they knew how to train. I was in shape, and they wanted to train. And so him and a couple of buddies, they start working out with me. Oh, whatever. I don't like to be associated with gang guys. They're just like, man, these cool white guys. They want to train with me, and they worked out hard. So I said, okay, it's cool. I have no choice. Well, then I like to train in the afternoon, but their gang leader said, well, these guys have to train in the morning because they need to report to the yard in the afternoon. So, you know, you need to start training them in the morning. And I'm like, well, I train in the afternoon. He's like, man, what kind of going to leave your guys hanging? Kind of put me on the spot. So I started getting up early in the morning to train these guys. So one day I go into the weight pit, and they're not there yet. And they come walking in, and I could tell something was up right away. You always know when something's up on the yard. Everybody's a little tense, a little quiet, looking over their shoulder, looking around. I didn't know what was going on, but something was up. So these guys come in, there's three of them, and they sit down, like, what's up, guys? You training or what? And they kind of just kind of nod, and they're looking around. So I know, but I think it's their other crew or whatever.
Yeah.
They sit down, and they pick up some real light dumbbells, like 10-pound dumbbells, and they act like they're curling or whatever. And I just like, oh, whatever, I'm going to go about my business. I think it's like deadlift day. They're like curling 15-pound dumbbells or something. So I'm like, so I'm over there like 10 feet away, like, hey, do what you're going to do. I don't know what's going on. And all of a sudden, a couple of guys come walking in, and this is the worst thing I saw in prison, really. They just jumped up and started stabbing these two guys. Must have stabbed them 100 times.
Wow.
I was like, what the hell? And I was so much shock at the time because I hadn't seen nothing like that before. That I didn't even know what to do. I just kind of kept working out. It was like watching a movie or something. It was surreal.
Yeah.
You know, everybody, the whole weight pit stops and watches. The funny thing is there was a guard check 30 yards away and with two guards in it, but they're in there playing grab ass, talking, drinking coffee, laughing about what they did the night before, not even looking. Meanwhile, these two guys are getting butchered. Turned out one of the guys was the wrong guy.
Oh.
You know? And the other guy was being hit because he disrespected some gang leader 5 years before at some other joint. That's how it happens. And, you know, these guys aren't even, you know, and one of them fought back. The other one didn't. He just sat there and took it, and he ran off and collapsed. And then, you know, that was a pretty bad one. But I've seen few times like that where I'm just working out. And all of a sudden I go, bam, 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 bam. I look over and somebody's just getting it, you know, just like, just happens like that. You know, I just kind of, but I put it in God's hands every day that I prayed it for protection. And I just, I do my best not to offend anyone. I'm polite and stay out of the way. I'm a lone wolf. Lone wolves make people nervous in prison because they expect you to have a gang or backup or whatever. When you don't, they're like, there's these two things. Either people think two things. It's a predatory environment. They think he's either crazy or he's a badass. One or the other, because who doesn't walk the yard with a crew in prison?
Hmm.
Well, because they prey on the weak. That's how it works. Well,
yeah.
You know, just like a pack of wolves, they don't attack a full-grown moose or an elk or whatever, because a big male, because they can get injured, and then it's not worth it. They attack the weak, and the frail, and the old. And that's how it works in prison. It's a predatory environment. When they see someone who's weak or shows any sign of weakness, they'll prey on them, extort them. You know what I'm saying? If he's a lone wolf like me, if you're not part of a gang, you're a lone wolf. They say, come up and say, hey, listen, you got to send us $300 to your account or my buddy in the street. Otherwise, you got to get out the yard tonight. You know, you got to lock up or pay this money or get stabbed. Well, a guy like me, that never happened. They never tried with me. And I guess just because I'm a pretty big guy, I work out, I'm strong, and I stayed to myself. And they either thought I was crazy or super tough. Kind of a combination of both. But, you know, I'm not the best. Now, I'm not saying I'm the baddest guy. I just wasn't going to let anyone try to squeeze me. I told myself all the years, if anybody cuts into me on that thing, I'm not saying one word. I'm just knocking them out.
Hmm.
And I'll deal with the consequences after that. I mean, they say, hey, listen, you got to pay. I say, okay. And then I'm breaking their jaw. And I'll deal with the consequences after that. But it never happened. Thank the good Lord. It never happened to me. So,
wow.
That's where it goes.
Now, I imagine, too, there was probably some good times, because from what I've understood talking to people, you know, being able to get into the weight pit was really kind of like a high point to the day. So I imagine that came together in a positive way there too. Did you guys ever have any kind of contests or anything like that in the gym?
Yeah, they had contests all the time. I won a couple. I won one years ago on my squat, bench, deadlift. My total was like, I think 1280. It was pretty good. But
nice.
But there is a lot of camaraderie. Like, I had my workout partners always tend to be younger guys from wanting to get in shape because they don't know what they're doing, but they're like young, fit guys.
Yeah.
And yeah, you have a lot of camaraderie. Your whole day is revolved around that. You know, you're keeping each other up and you're doing a chow together and you're telling, timing your meals around that, and maybe have a cup of coffee before you go work out, and then you get out there and there's a lot of, like, you know, male bonding, camaraderie, ball busting, you know, making fun of it. Yeah. You know, you're like, hey, come on, you know. Like, for example, when the young guys want to come and train with me, there's always guys want to train with us. I say the youngest guy and the newest guy has to pick up and rack the weight. So if you're new to the crew, you got to run out to the weight pit, get a bar, get a bench, because it's hard to get it sometimes. Everybody runs out there. So you got to be the first guy to sprint out there, get a bar and a bench or whatever we're doing, and then at the end of the workout, you got to rack all the weight. But after like a year, if you're still in the crew, then I'll start helping, and the rest of us will start, you know, helping. And eventually, if you earn your way in after like a year, we're all equals, you know what I'm saying? But in the beginning, you just kind of have to work your way in and see that you're going to go, you're going to train, you're going to train hard. And if you don't show up or you train half-assed, I'll cut you out quick. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, you're just in the way now. But if you're not, if you're willing to show up and train hard, I'll teach you, you know, form and technique and diet and breathing and everything you need to know. I don't mind taking time out of my life to mentor you and show you. But if you half-ass it in any way, get out of the way, man. Now you just cost me time. I don't need it.
Yeah, makes sense, man.
There's a lot of bonding, a lot of fun. You know, bust each other's balls, and then I like to geek a guy up. A lot of guys like to break each other down and be like, oh man, you know, if we can call him, call a guy weak, you can't do this, but I'm the opposite. Like, when my workout partners do good, I walk around telling everybody how good they do and how good they look, you know, trying to build them up.
Nice.
Listening to Alan and the other guys, I feel like I can't complain about anything anymore. I mean, sometimes my gym is too hot. Sometimes my gym is too cold. You know, sometimes I don't want to eat my food. I can't see complaining about that stuff when I look at this, but you know, if there was a moral of the story, I think that this would be it.
I want to tell you about prison. It sucks. It's miserable. It's crap.
Yeah.
You'll hate it. That's it. End of story. There's nothing to it. I don't want to rehash my time in there.
Yeah.
I'm doing it for just one time, and then that's it. I don't talk about prison with my girl, my friends, nobody. I'd rather talk about my life now, my fifth new life, you know, that I'm living now. It's not a conducive environment because it's high stress.
Yeah.
You're always looking over your shoulder. There's always tension in the air.
Yeah.
You never sleep good. You never sleep good, ever. Because, you know, three times in the middle of the night, they flick the lights on. You're in a room with another man. He snores. He gets up to pee, whatever. And then they flick the lights on three times a night and yell over the microphone and count time on your bunk. You know, and then people are walking by in the hall laughing, or you hear people yelling back and forth. So you never are well rested. You're sleeping on a hard bunk mat and another, and basically in a broom closet with another dude. You know, and, so it's a tough environment, but there's a will, there's a way. You know, what I'm saying, if you want to get in shape, you will. It's not easy though. It's not easy there, for sure.
Alan's a really positive guy. I mean, after having been in prison for 13 years, I could imagine being so beaten down. And everything that he's talking about today is just so positive. You can even hear it talking about his past. By the way, while he was talking to me, he was driving to go fly fishing. He had said that every day he was in prison, he dreamed about doing things like fly fishing. He'd lay there and he would think about it, and he just knew it wasn't part of what his reality would be. And now he's getting to do those things. He's out, he's done his time, and he's free. It made me feel really happy for him that he was able to go on that trip and live that dream out. So when I thought about this topic, somebody really came to mind that I wanted to bring on, and that person is John Romano. I've been following John forever. I mean, I went back to the MD days where on and off, he's mentioned that he had done time. And when I started having the idea that I wanted to do this story, my thought was, there is nobody that I want on this show more than John Romano.
There's a lot of felons in our, you know, neck of the woods.
Yeah.
But I mean, it goes with the, it's like saying there's a lot of felons in a biker community. I mean, yeah, well, you know, and there's a lot of bikers live weights. So, I mean, it's, there's a bad, you know, we are among the bad boys. And so that's what you get. You know, a lot of us have, I know a lot of guys have been to prison, man, a lot, you know, and some are still there.
Right.
It's just, there's a lot of us, you know.
And I've heard it's getting harder, too. A lot of the guys I've talked to have told me they are taking weights out of the facilities now.
Well, yeah, there was the Zuck Zimmerman.
The Zimmer Act. Yeah.
Zimmerman, something like that.
I think it's just Zimmer, the No Frills Act, they're calling it.
Yeah. Because, well, you know, I experienced both state and federal lockups.
Okay.
And the Zimmer law applies to federal facilities.
Okay.
The states run their county jails and their state prisons, you know, within the state governments, and they pretty much make up their own laws. And within that, many of the prisons, or some of the prisons, are subcontracted and run by outside non-governmental or non-police force agencies, because the sheriff's department, it handles the county jails, and then the state runs the prisons.
Okay.
So the what you find in county jail is pretty much nothing. What you find in state prisons is you still get some weights, and they have a weight pile and all that. But what you on the federal level, that's where they took all the weights away.
Okay.
So federal prison, where I unfortunately spent most of my incarcerated life, starts with its own version of county jail, which in California is called MDC, or Metropolitan Detention Center. That's in downtown Los Angeles. It's basically a skyscraper with little tiny slit windows, and that's where you go. And that's the federal version of county jail. And when I got there in 1987, there was a, remember what a universal gym was?
That we had, absolutely.
The chrome thing there was one of those.
And that was it. Just one.
Yeah. That one, and it was a little one. It had a bench, it had a shoulder and a cable and like a bench that you could do, hyper extensions on if somebody held your head down or something.
Wow.
But, yes. So it was very minimal, but they had that. Now those are gone.
Huh.
And the way they implemented the Zimmer Act was that as things were, you know, broke or became unmaintainable, they would just remove them from the facility until ultimately the amount of, you know, fitness equipment had attenuated to practically nothing.
Right.
And so and they weren't bringing any back. Now I have a friend who was put away for quite a while. He's doing an 11-year stretch.
All right.
And he had to get into yoga because there was no, you know, weights.
Wow.
And they actually tried to, he actually had to file a lawsuit that they tried to get him to stop doing yoga.
Really?
Yeah, they don't let you box. They don't let you do anything physical. I mean, like, just barely, like, you know, the basketball courts have no – they're not repairing anything that has to do with physical fitness.
Hmm.
So, you know, it just gets more and more deteriorated and until it's ultimately – they can just patch it so many times. The inmates will patch it.
Yeah.
And so many times until it's ultimately going to go away. But they tried – getting back to him. They tried get him to stop doing yoga. And, you know, they would write him up or throw him in the hall for doing yoga, and which only made him do more yoga. but he was able to, he had to file a freaking lawsuit to leave him alone because he claimed it was, you know, religious.
Sure.
And they actually had to back off and let him do yoga. But that's the extent to which they are, the community is in fear that we put people in prison and then they come out super prisoners because they get all the knowledge of the better criminals and they get super concentrated physical fitness, boxing lessons, fighting lessons, learning how to kill each other.
They're going to take that yoga and start hurting people with it.
Yeah. So that's what happens. You know, you get these people come out of prison more fierce people than when they went in. And that's the community fears that what we need to do is really stop locking up so many people because we do that more than any other country in the world.
Sure.
Reserve prisons for people who really need to be there.
John is right about this. Some of the statistics I look at say that the United States is responsible for about 5% of the world's population, yet we house 25% of the world's prisoners. And it's only getting worse. Back in 1972, we had about 300,000 inmates throughout the U.S. Since then, it's grown to 2 million by the year 2000. At 1990, it was only 1 million. So in less than a 30-year span, the prison population has doubled? What's wrong with this picture? According to a civil rights group called the California Prison Focus, no other society in human history has imprisoned so many of its own citizens.
But, the whole concept of weight training in prison anymore is pretty much a thing of the past.
Hmm.
In federal state prisons, you're still going to lift weights.
Okay. So you're telling me that at that initial facility, they had one universal machine for the entire building?
No, for the entire floor. For the entire floor. Yeah, for the entire floor, which was 120 some odd inmates.
So how would they work that out? Could like some people go down there sometimes, or everybody took turns? Because
first of all, it was locked in a room, and you could only there was no outside at MDC. Everything was in the building. They had like these outside rec areas, which were basically like half of the windows were missing and chain link fence was put in. But still inside, it was inside outside. And in one of those little rooms off to that is where they had the universal thing. So you could only use it during rec time, which was only like an hour, you know, certain times of the day.
Okay.
Yeah, it was tough. You know, I mean, there was me and another white guy and then like, you know, 87, you know, members of the Venice Shoreline Crips. and the other guys were, Mexican gang members. And it was, you know, pretty much, it was pretty much a free for all. I mean, you could, and but they were really not into too much into lifting weights. This one Colombian dude that was in there for like importing tons of keys of cocaine,
allegedly. Right?
He was in good shape. I remember him, and he recognized me from somewhere. And
nice.
We actually worked out together.
Nice
there, but it was few and far between. There wasn't really good, you know, workout camaraderie until I got to the prison camp.
Okay.
But those places now are, but you know, some of them, you know, if you're lucky enough, if you do a federal crime and you end up in your classified level one, which is a camper,
okay,
you're going to go to a federal prison camp. A lot of them now are maintained on military bases, and you're basically confined to the military base.
Hmm.
I don't know if you can get in. I'm sure you can figure out a way to get into their weight facilities and use their stuff. But most of them now are on military bases, so you can, you know, usually finagle your way into somewhere. But if you're level two and you're behind a wall, forget it. You got nothing coming.
Okay. So when you were at the camp, then what did you have available to you?
When I got to camp, I thought I like arrived in a resort. Okay, so I had been for 9 months locked up in MDC because I couldn't make bail.
Okay.
And it was a huge bail. And I just had to stay there until I went through my, you know, court process. And, you know, I ended up pleading guilty because I had no choice, which almost 97% of all federal arrests lead to that, because you just don't win against them.
Yeah.
So you got to take a deal, and which required no ratting, I have to maintain,
right on,
because then it wouldn't be a deal. And the 9 months of that, it was locked in a building, man. My hair fell out. I shriveled up to almost nothing. There was like no food. It was just and whatever food there was just tenuous at best. I mean, I probably ate half of what ever was brought into that block.
That bad, huh?
Yeah, a lot of times you just couldn't tell what it was, and it's had a funky smell, and nothing got there hot. It was all, you know, they microwaved it all, like when they brought it in.
Oh, geez.
So it was just horrendous. So I probably got down to about 145 pounds,
wow,
maybe. Yeah, it was pretty bad. And I never saw the sunshine either, because there was no outside.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, in the real sun, no vitamin D. So when I got to prison camp, it was in Boron, California. It had been a military base.
Okay.
Right near Nellis Air Force Base, which is in Las Vegas. So it was in the middle of the high desert, and it literally in the middle of nowhere. This is the middle of nowhere. There was a air traffic control tower at the peak of the high point inside the prison camp.
Okay.
We were allowed to walk up there and, you know, like take laps, you know, you'd walk up there and you look out, and all you would see for just out to the absolute end of your range of vision was mountain range after mountain range, just desert, 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 desert. You know, at night you'd see a couple lights on here, that you could see Vegas. You could see the glow of Vegas off in the distance.
But wow.
That's how far away you were. And, you know, jets and, you know, army, you know, jet fighters used to practice in the basin, you know, right below us. It was pretty cool. For watching, we got a space shuttle come down a couple times.
No kidding.
But when I got there, it's like you're driving through this gate, and you know, there's a pool. The guys are laying out by the pool, getting tanned, and listening to music, eating watermelon, you know, and I'm like, where the fuck am I, you know? And it was this huge weight pile. It was just an outside inside outside covered, you know, area that was just had, you know, jungle gym, tons of free weights, dumbbells, benches. It was like going to the gym, and it was great.
Man, that sounds like it sounds like a good time. That sounds like you'd want to go to something like this.
The only thing you really, you know, starved for there, other than, you know, females, was intellectual stimulation.
Oh, really?
Other than that, it was pretty chill. It was pretty, you know, I I got a lot of thinking done when I was there. I wrote a book, you know, while I was in there. I made good use of it and met Dan Duchesne. That was pretty.
That's where you met Dan Duchesne, huh?
Yeah.
In bodybuilding, Dan Duchesne is a man that needs no introduction. Still, for the benefit of anybody younger out there who might not know, I'll tell you a little bit about Dan. He was the author of Body Opus and the Steroid Handbook, first and second edition. He was also considered to be the first bodybuilding guru. He brought drugs to bodybuilding that nobody had thought of before, things that we take for granted now, like clenbuterol. He also made popular Nubane, so there is some bad with the good. From what I understand, this was his first of two times in jail, and he was doing 36 months for a Mexican conspiracy to manufacture steroids for illicit export to the U.S. And for John, looking back at this moment, I'm sure this was a historical point in his life. They came to be good friends after this.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Where were you? Where were you in the facility? Like, what can you tell me about that day when you met him?
Oh, absolutely. Remember it clear as day. I walked into the weight pile, you know, and I knew who he was because I lived in Venice.
Okay.
That's where I was arrested from. So I lived in Venice, California, and I lived literally around the corner from Gold's Gym, and I was dating a trainer there. You know, I was in the gym all the time, and I just when you spend that much, you know how gyms are. You know, you spend that much time in the gym, you kind of know the regulars.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I knew who Dan was, and I had taken a couple Sunday school classes from Zimpano.
Okay,
just briefly, Michael Zimpano ran what they called Sunday school classes at Gold's Gym, where they taught people how to use anabolic steroids. I know, completely different time in history.
When I had seen him there, you know, a couple times. So I basically knew who he was. We just weren't from, enough to just like nod to each other, you know, when we passed each other in the gym, but yeah, we didn't know each other. So then when I walked into the weight pile, you know, at Boron, there was Dan, you know, so I go, I know you from Venice. He goes, yeah, you're, you know, so-and-so's boyfriend. And I go, yeah, that's me. And so, you know, that was instant, you know, you fall in together instantly in a sure. situation like that because you're, wow, what are the chances of running into a guy in federal prison that's from your home gym, you know?
Right.
So, yeah. So, you know, when we became really good friends, he was such a bright, intelligent guy. We talked about all kinds of shit. That's what made the time go by, you know, is your brain is working, you know?
That makes sense, man. So what was the food like there then? Could you actually gain some muscle back? You said you got in there, you were like down to like $1.45. What happened from there?
Well, you know, the first rule of thumb is for a bodybuilder going to prison is you get a job in the kitchen.
Ah.
Okay. So everybody works in prison. So you just, there's jobs for everyone. So, you know, I of course knew how to cook and, so yeah, I immediately said, you know, yeah, because they kind of ask you, you know, when you get there, what do you know how to do? Because oddly enough, every aspect of everything that ever needs to be done in a prison camp is manned by somebody who knows how to do it. anything from barbers to landscapers to, you know, mechanics, truck drivers.
Interesting.
Just everything. Every single other than the what do you call it? The clerical stuff, other than the executive stuff. And there was only probably it's a very short, small staff of executive people, you know, at work in the prison on the office level on the other side of the line.
Okay.
Everything else was done by the inmates. Absolutely everything from making sure the pool was clean and the filter was working to the grounds, everything was done by the guys.
Wow.
So the kitchen, you know, they want to find out what you know how to do. So, I told them I cook. I want a job in the kitchen. And I actually kind of hit it off with the officer who was in charge of the kitchen. He was kind of a cool guy.
Cool.
So, yeah, he put me on. And then, you know, that became also I didn't have any money because of my situation. And I was, you know, cut off from everything. So I didn't have any commissary. So I had to make, I sold I sold protein.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I would just take, you know, guys would come through the line, you know, extra scoop of tuna fish, couple extra eggs, you know. So, yeah, I had a pretty good income stream just from being able to dish out
nice.
A little extra protein on the chow line.
Plus, then that also went to you as well. So you were able to eat. So but give me an idea, like how many grams of protein do you think you were getting a day? I know it was a while ago, but.
I was as much as I wanted.
Really?
I had no limits on what I could put away. Because you just walk into the cooler and start eating, and no one will see you.
Nice.
So, I mean, a lot of it wasn't very high quality protein. I mean, I tried to lean as much towards tuna. I mean, tuna fish is king in prison.
Yeah.
You know, and they actually even some of them even sell it in the commissaries. But they took all the protein powder out. You can't buy protein powder in supplements anymore.
That's what I've heard. So you could at the time back then?
Yes, you could. And actually, I used to buy this protein powder. I can't remember the name of it, but it didn't mix. It didn't mix at all in water. So what you had to do is, what I figured out you had to do is you had to buy the instant hot chocolate mix.
Mm.
And you mix the two powders together. And
okay.
And then you mix it with the water and it moves. And I showed Dan that. And he goes, that was great.
Nice.
Yeah. So Duchesne was drinking smooth protein just like I was.
So what about obviously we always talk about you want to eat every 2 to 3 hours. You didn't have the kitchen available every 2 to 3 hours. How would you store stuff, you know, for later?
Being a lot, you know, there's this saying, necessity is the mother of invention.
Okay.
And you really just kind of figure that shit out. You know, I mean, I figured out a way to sneak ice into my dorm.
Nice.
And I actually rigged up with a couple extra blankets and a crate. I was actually able to, and a piece of plastic, I actually rigged up like a little cooler.
No way.
that the ice would last like all night long.
Okay.
So, and I would bring home, I would sneak back, you know, like I said, tuna fish was king. I brought, you know, you could scoop it out into like a little cup.
Okay.
So, you know, that was probably maybe 30 or 40 grams a pop there. And, you know, I'd bring home pancakes let's see what else. They used to bring the sandwich meat in these big long tubes, like a giant sausage.
Yeah.
And to slice it up. So we'd go back there and hack off a hunk of that, you know, and, you know, I mean, salami is not really the best protein, but
hey, it's better than nothing, man.
But it is nevertheless protein. So, you just figure shit out. I mean, you know, like, you know, when the food, you know, shipments come in, so you know when something is more liable to fall off the back of the truck than not.
Mm.
And then it deals with the guys in the trucks, you know, bring me an extra, you know, bring me a pallet or a box of, you know, tuna cans or something. And, you know, if you got a way for them to get a money order or Western Union on the outside, you can do that. You just become inventive,
and you
find ways to get around. It's, but you, like, I will always preface this with the fact that bear in mind, I was in prison in 1987 to 1989. So, that was a long time ago.
Yeah.
Things radically changed since then. And I, from what I hear, you're not getting away with what the kind of stuff we used to get away with, but you know, maybe so. I don't know. I haven't been to prison and I'm not planning on going.
Right. In a while. Right.
I don't know, but for the guys that are, you know, about to go, you know, or are in there now, if they get their hands on this, you know, it's a tough thing. It's kind of one of those things that you got to kind of like focus on 100% if you're going to do any lifting and anything for your body in prison, because you are so, so, so limited and everything is against you from the ability and, you know, facility to do anything, to the food you need to eat, to the hours that you're able to sneak around and do this. It's really, really hard, man. So I feel for these guys.
it almost sounds like it gives you something to focus on in a situation where otherwise you really don't have much to think about or do.
Exactly. That's what I was kind of where I was going with that. Yeah. The focus becomes all consuming.
Yeah.
And like the, my buddy that got into yoga, I mean, that's really, you know, 11 years, man, is just fucking, I can't even imagine that. And, you know, it's a lot of, time to, you know, figure out how to pass with a very limited, you know, stimulatory, you know, universe. So you've got to find your way to make the time pass. And you know, something like this, where you're so challenged in your, you know, wherewithal to be able to put together something that you become really consumed with it. And that really helps you, you know, deal with your issue.
Yeah. So 1989, when you walked out of there, how much did you weigh at that point?
I was about 190 when I got out of there.
Nice. That's a healthy weight, man.
Yeah. Yeah. I was about, cause I, like I said, I had gone down so low.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And you know, the food, just the quality of the food was just so terrible. You know, even working in the kitchen, I mean, how there's only so many egg whites you can eat. You know, there's only so much tuna fish you can eat. Although I, to this day, I can't eat egg whites. And I got to really be hungry to eat tuna fish.
That's funny. You're the second person to tell me that tuna fish is off the menu permanently now.
I ate so many cans of tuna fish in my lifetime. It's like a mind boggling to, if I was ever to count, easily the pile would reach the moon. I mean, it's just too much. So yeah, I can't, tuna fish is not something it just brings up negative connotations too. So
sure. And you can afford to do other things today. So, you know, why go back to it? Right.
Yeah.
All right, true. Man. Well, this is awesome. I really appreciate it. Is there anything here that I'm missing? Like I said, this is something that I'm on the outside of, but it's fascinating to me. Is there an aspect here that I'm not hitting on that I should be?
Yeah, don't fucking end up in prison.
That's the take home lesson right there.
Yeah, that's like number one, I would say, in on the list. It's, you know, it's just, it's tough living in America, you know, it's tough living in America, although, you know, it's the greatest country in the world, blah, blah, blah. I mean, yeah, it is, but I have experienced other countries and it's to some degree, it's very difficult to live in America. And to make matters worse, living in America and in the American prison system, again, other countries way worse, but still, I wouldn't wish this on anybody. Living in the American prison system is extremely difficult and it's not fun. And the idea that these experiences build character and whatnot is a bunch of bullshit. My life would be, I would be probably more charismatic if I had never gone to prison. So, just try not to go.
And really, that's probably the most valuable lesson of this whole program. Do everything you can to stay out. I don't know whether this podcast is going to reach any inmates that are serving time right now. I've heard that they do have access to the computers. They have access to the internet. I tried to get somebody who was serving time currently to call me, but we couldn't make it work out. The logistics are just difficult. In order for me to record a phone conversation, I need to be the one calling, and unfortunately, I can't call prisoners. They have to call me. But I do hope that this podcast does reach some people that are inside right now, that are locked up in lifting, some guys that are going through this every day. I hope that this podcast helps them a little bit. I hope that it helps them to pass the time. And I hope that everybody else has enjoyed it. I hope that you get some better perspective maybe on how easy we really do have it. I mean, if you're on the outside and you're lifting weights and trying to get big, you have everything on your side. There's no reason you can't. I hear so many excuses from people every day, every week, just saying like, I work too many hours, or I have to go to school, you know, or I don't have a lot of money. It doesn't matter. You can make it work if you want it bad enough. So if you don't want it bad enough, then maybe you should just face that reality. But don't lie to yourself. We all have the resources. And I'm not trying to make anybody feel guilty. It's just a matter of what we want to do with our time. While Alan was inside, he got into writing, and pretty soon he plans on publishing his first work of fiction, so I wish him the best of luck with that. Mark is a personal trainer, and it sounds like he's really successful. He's really busy with his clients. Paul, the first guy we spoke to, he'd like to figure out how to do some type of inter-prison program to help people learn how to lift weights and learn how to channel their physicality. I think that's a great idea. He's also planning on making a comeback and competing. John Romano owns a Gold's Gym down in Guadalajara, Mexico. He's also a nutrition coach for bodybuilders. If you're interested in talking to John more, you can reach him at john_romano6969@mac.com. I'm really grateful that John and the others were willing to talk about their experiences. Like I said, this is something that I've had no experience with, but I feel like I can relate to being in a situation where it's difficult to get in all the protein I need and to get the training done that I need to get done in order to reach my goals. I have to imagine that for everybody involved here, this was just a really difficult experience, and I'm grateful that they were willing to relive it for a little bit on this show today.
Farther down the line, far from Folsom Prison, that's where I want to stay. And I'd let that lonesome whistle blow my blues away.